Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of experience experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Good morning, everybody. Zach Schaefer here.
And David Ponder.
And we are bringing you Life Lab on a chilly November morning.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. You've got a nice sunrise right here. It's a nice day. Today we are chatting about something that Dave actually exhibited for the first time this morning, not even knowing that he was going to do so. We're talking about courage. And usually when Dave shows up here at 6:30 a.m. on Saturdays, he looks like a J. Crew model. His boots and his belt match, and his gloves are perfectly cut and tailored fit.
Well, everyone knows this story is bullshit.
No, it's real. He's always looking good. I'm in sweatpants and sweatshirts every day. And he finally came in. He had the courage to come in looking disheveled like a 37-year-old man with two toddlers should at 6:30 on a Saturday. So thank you for living our value today,
yeah.
Dave.
We'll talk about accidental courage here in the future.
Accidental courage. But does it still count? Yeah, I think it should.
It does. It does. Yeah, it has to.
Nice, man. Well, where do you want to go with this? I've got some thoughts and notes, and I know you do as well.
Yeah. Do you have a definition? I always do the definition.
You do, but I have one too.
Do it.
To me, it's easy. It's courage is strength in the face of three things. So strength in the face of either fear, grief, or pain. You've got to exhibit strength to have courage, and it's usually in the face of something we don't want. If that something we don't want is there and you're acting and calling it courage, I'm not quite sure if that counts.
I really like that. I like breaking down the three things that it's in the face of. Obviously, fear is the one that everyone thinks about.
Right.
Pain and suffering comes to mind. So that makes me, I mean, and we'll cover those plenty.
Yeah.
What about grief? Talk to me about that.
It takes courage to keep having one foot in front of the other, to touch on what we talked about last week, which will be released in a few weeks, progress. Man, life sucks sometimes. People die. Goals aren't achieved. Bad things happen. Bad accidents occur. And then it's up to us to either pack up shop and quit or to have the courage to stay the distance. And
man.
That kind of goes along with process or progress. We didn't talk about courage last week, but we could have, because it does take some courage to keep moving forward.
I agree 100%. You know, I actually think about, I think everyone's mind can go to somebody who didn't act because of fear, because we all experience that sort of stuff, or acted in a way that might not be in line with their values because of fear, or because of pain, right? Like somebody who didn't do something because of pain. Like, I think we all innately can empathize with that. Grief, I think, is a hard one because many people haven't experienced a high level of grief. Well, that, like, high enough to prevent, to, like, change the way that they live their life.
Great point. Excellent point. That, and then coupled with where my mind went, is we do everything possible as a society to ensure our brain is just pumping out serotonin at all levels and we're constantly entertained and happy and feeling good. We have such a negative connotation with the idea of sadness, which is at the core what grief is. We've made that a negative feeling. And I even see this as my kids going through kindergarten and first grade. They talk to their counselors, which I like, and they give them emotional mechanisms to deal with and identify their emotions, which I love. And one of the little, you know, emoticons of the emotions dancing around was about sadness. Shit, there's a great movie. What's that movie called by, like, Disney or Pixar where it's about the emotions and they're, like, alive? It's a really well-done movie where adults can get into it, too. Mm-hmm. The whole point of that movie is that sadness is really important, and we can't just try to do everything to ignore it and avoid it. Because if not, that leads to anger then coming out.
Yeah, like, as you've been talking through this, well, a couple things. Number one, I need to watch that movie, figure out what that is. Secondly, it seems to me that when I was younger, I felt emotions in a more pronounced way. And, like, as an adult, we are, I don't know if you want to say encouraged or taught or...
Yeah, I have the exact phrase.
To, like, shove it down.
You don't have very high emotional intelligence.
Yeah, right, right.
You're right? Your EQ quotient. I get it. That's trying to prevent, like, outbursts that are unproductive, that don't help us work effectively and efficiently. But we train ourselves to be kind of automatons and exhibit the exact same types of emotions in the exact same type of scenarios.
And, you know, here's what I think's hard about it, right? Is we, and I mean, I'm guilty, too, of trying to teach my kids, like, you can feel those emotions. It's good. But there's a time and a place for it.
Right.
And that's not how your body works. That's not how, you know what I mean? Like,
it goes back to order versus chaos. We view that emotional expression as a bit of chaos, so we need to put order to it, and here's how you do it. Real quick, that movie's called Inside Out. It's a good movie.
Okay, I'll watch that.
The kids will like it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'll definitely watch it. Inside Out. So I guess what I'm saying is you learn to postpone the feeling, and then, at least for me, sometimes you just never really process it, right? You never get back to fully feeling it, to fully processing it, because in that moment you shoved it down. That was the time to process it. That's when your body could fully go through that emotion. Like, it was welling up inside you and you could feel it, and you said, not now. I'll deal with this later, right?
So, okay, so let's extend that. So for adults who have strong emotional reactions, are you saying that's an opportunity for courage? That guy just freaked out on that lady at Blockbuster. That took courage. I mean, you could make that argument as to what you're saying. He allowed his unbridled emotions out, and that's not socially acceptable. He overcame that social fear of being a dick.
No.
I know you're not, but I'm saying somebody could make that argument.
Yeah, they could. And they could say somebody who, you know, is quote-unquote emotionally unintelligent, you know, is somehow
courageous. I know that's not what you're saying. I was poking fun.
Yeah, no. I think I'm trying to recognize, you know, like, I think this is what this podcast is about, right? Like, talking through this.
Yeah, figuring it out.
But the bottom line of what I was thinking was that, like you said, like, feeling profound sadness is something that is important.
Yes, it is.
And we tend to want to not deal with that in the moment because we've got other stuff we got to take care of. We have to be strong. We're adults. Other people depend on us. You know what I mean? Like, we don't take out time to just process that emotion, to just be sad about something. So a lot of times we don't. I wonder what role that has to play with depression in society. Oh,
I'm
and
sure
anxiety.
I'm sure there's a million pages that have been written about that specific
point. It just
point
can't go away.
In academic
it's
got to
be, like, in you still. And then,
yeah, when you said, oh, you just push it down, well, that's where psychologists would start.
Yeah.
They'd say that emotion hasn't been processed. It's been repressed. And through a series of, you know, behavioral sessions and behavioral therapy, they're going to help you try to reconnect with those emotions. What triggered that? Where you pushed it? Why you pushed it? Help you get it out and process it and then move on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a couple. So I read or I listened to a podcast that was it was actually a book. It was an audio book. It was called Play, and it was about the art of play and restoring play in your life to get over that. And it was basically the author said he came to a point where he was like fear, right? If you want to talk about courage, fear was ruling his life. Fear, anxiety, like, and he didn't know why is the worst part. Grief probably that he hadn't processed. And then he goes into the ways that he tried to deal with it, and obviously play being a big one. And then there was another one recently by one of these sort of like a Tony Robbins type guy who has his own podcast. And the same thing happened to him. And he had, like, we're talking, these people were in that state for months at a time, couldn't sleep.
Yeah, and these people had money to work with top-tier professionals, yes, and experts to really understand their body and their mind and what's going on and try all the different types of therapies.
Which is what I think I'm One of the things that I want to talk about. So there was a
well, could I make one quick point about your grief?
Yes.
When is the one time, there's many times in life where we can experience very deeply felt grief, but there's one that touches every single human. What would that be?
Death.
Death. What do most people do after a funeral? They get together and they drink.
Yeah.
Right? And for Irish people, of which I am Irish heritage, the Irish wake, there's a phrase for it where you get together and you just drink a ton and get shit-faced. The psychological aspect of that is you're pushing that sadness and grief down, man. You are just getting rid of it to not acknowledge it, and you're using alcohol to do that. So in the one time when we could experience and process this huge emotion that we've trained ourselves for whatever reason to say we don't want to feel that because it doesn't feel good, we then use alcohol or some other substance to just obliterate it.
Yeah.
That to me is interesting.
It is. I wonder what the ritual aspect of it and alcohol's play in it. So let's set aside alcohol and let's just assume what you're saying is right. And let's talk about the ritualistic aspect of, because when I imagine them getting together and drinking, I also imagine them singing songs that they sang together and telling stories about the guy and them all crying. And so I guess what I'm saying is I'm sure alcohol helps divorce that feeling of grief and whatever, and probably does prevent some of the processing. And then I wonder, like, okay, it, you know, obviously, Lauren, this keeps coming up on our podcast. We got to have her on. My wife is starting a business that's focused on this sort of stuff. And the stuff that I see that I'm excited by when we talk about end-of-life celebrations has to deal with all these rituals and shared experiences that we had, and trying to have people do those again in an effort to like process it, right? So like it's things that made you happy, things that made you excited, songs you liked, you know, stuff like that, and you want to incorporate that into your ceremony so that everyone else experiences it again in remembrance of you, right? So that there's like joy injected into the grief of you dying.
Yeah. I'm not saying all the joy and stuff doesn't happen as well.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, I think that's part of grief.
Yeah.
Part of grief is because it is like a roller coaster of emotions, right? Remembering the person and remembering something funny they said, and tears will be streaming down your face, and you'll laugh in remembrance of that.
What about the opposite? The stone cold person at the funeral with the hard heart who doesn't cry at all. Is that courage? You know, not just cry, but just process any of it. Again, so depending on how we think about courage, like people could really extend the argument, I believe, in negative ways.
I agree with you 100%. And I don't want to make it a generational thing, but it seems like a generational thing.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Like the older generations would say, yes, like that's courage. You just move on.
They'd view it as stoicism.
And what I would say is, if there's a reason for it, right? So like if you're in a war, you don't have time to grieve. You have to put on that face and continue on. If you are in a depression and this is happening over and over again, and you're having to provide for the people that are left around you, then yes, that is a good virtue, right? So I would say it's situational. But if you're just doing it today, right. Like, no, I don't understand that.
Showing no emotion.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Yeah, good. You said you had a couple other things you were going to touch off on.
I don't know. We're going to have to come back to them. We'll come back to
them. Okay. I mean, so we've talked about emotional courage up to this point quite a bit, but there's other types.
There's a lot. So there are, like, I found a great article on Psychology Today that talks about 6 aspects of courage, and the one that matches up with what we were just talking about, I believe, like the grief or whatever piece of it. It's not just grief. It's also like suffering with dignity or something, right? There's just a couple quotes that are really good. One is a Viktor Frankl quote. I love his. It says, "There is no need to be ashamed of tears, for tears bear witness that a man has the greatest of courage, the courage to suffer." I think that applies directly to what you were talking about the stone-cold, stone-faced person just sitting there, not having the courage
right.
to show their suffering.
Yeah, I like it. Again, my mind is just so devil's advocate. Then I jump automatically to the other line. Okay, well, then what about the martyr, the person who chooses to suffer all the time and then talks about the virtue of their suffering and look at me. Right? Is well, that courageous? Well, I don't know.
That's just like anything. You can take anything to either extreme and it's not right.
Right. No, but I agree with that point in general.
Yeah. And then the other one is, until the day of his death, no man can be sure of his courage. I thought that was good too. But it basically is like one of the elements of courage is facing suffering with dignity and faith, right?
Yeah.
So
I would say honesty is also something that is tied to all of this, and having a whatever you want to call it, just radical transparency, just radical honesty with yourself and the situation and the fact that bad shit is going to happen. We are going to die. We don't know what's after. That can be scary. It is scary. And so being emotional beings, it's easier to train ourselves to come up with philosophies, systems, behavioral procedures that help us manage difficult emotions in a way that gives us a sense of confidence and courage.
If I understand you, where my mind is going is it's justification for acting outside of our values because it's easier or because it, quote unquote, makes sense.
Yeah, I like that.
Because, I mean, there's two of these elements that they talk about that I think touch on what you're saying. One, following your heart, right? Like, and there's a great quote by Soren Kierkegaard. To dare is to lose one's footing momentarily. To not dare is to lose oneself.
Yeah, I would agree. And it makes me think of just, it takes courage to be emotionally vulnerable, right? And Brene Brown's a speaker today. She talks a lot about that. But being vulnerable, people don't like that. And why? There's a lot of reasons. I believe it's always tied back to power and control.
I agree with that.
But it does take courage to show true vulnerability, not strategic vulnerability where you're secretly doing a quid pro quo and trying to manipulate somebody to achieve your agenda, but real vulnerability, trying to grow yourself or a relationship or whatever.
Yes. Like following. Okay. So I love it. It's the following your heart. It's the moment in Jerry Maguire when he stands up. And he's like, I'm leaving here. Who's coming with me? Right?
Absolutely.
And nobody. Nobody comes with him. And he's like, come on. You're coming with me, right?
That's a good. Nope. Great.
Nothing.
That's courage right? on the screen.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the following your heart piece, right? And he loses his footing momentarily in hopes of not losing himself, right? Because he knows if he stays in that place.
It's not me.
It's not him. He's and that goes back to what I was talking about, which is like we choose to act based on things that are incongruent with our values.
Let me give you one that's real concrete for our fans. I'm retiring from SIUE in May. So it's not going to be some Jerry Maguire scene because the way it's gone down, it's just not as dramatic and I'm not as good looking as Tom Cruise. But I've already told my chair of my department and had that conversation, which was difficult. And I had a whole plan and didn't have to use any of it just because it turned into such a really fantastic conversation. But I'm quitting arguably one of the most secure jobs you can have in today's world because I have tenure. And it's taking a lot of courage to do that and to live my values and to follow my heart and to all the stuff I talk about being entrepreneurial and being an entrepreneur and going after things. I can't do that as a professor to the degree that I know I'm capable of. And if I kept trying to do those things at the same time and I died, I'd always look back and say, what if I put both feet in for me and what I think I'm capable of versus trying to be a professor, which comes with a lot of strings, man. There's a lot of stuff you got to do there that I don't want to do. And not just that I think is useless, actually, in terms of all the bureaucracy and administration crap you got to do there.
Yeah.
So to me, that's being vulnerable. It's being honest. It's trying to follow my heart. I, you know, there's some uncertainty there. I believe it's going to work. I know it's going to work out no matter what. But every time somebody, I've shared it with them and they say something like, well, you know, if things just don't go work out, you can go back to academia, right? Every time I hear that, I'm just like, thank you. Thank you. That's more fuel for the courage I need to be like, fuck no, that's done. That path is closed. I'm going onward and upward to something else.
Yeah, there's like I saw it in either a show or a movie or something where it's like you burn the boats, right? Like if you're going to go to attack somebody and you come on ship, burn your boats so you don't have a path of escape.
Like, so the phrase that is my phrase and I'm writing some crap up about right now is I'm calling, you've heard burn the net, like the safety net. Burn the net, leave the poles. Meaning, don't crumble all the foundations, your skills, the people that you've, the relationships you've built, but burn that net because, as you know, I say a lot, necessity is the mother of invention. And once that net's gone, man, you're going to put focus in where it needs to be to accomplish goals. But you need those poles there because you could then build something else eventually, maybe a sail that you can fly with, something like that.
This is the perfect quote that I think applies to it. And this is to... This says to persevering in the face of adversity, but I think it applies to what you're talking about as far as like following your heart and being courageous in this moment. It says, when we are afraid, we ought not to occupy ourselves with endeavoring to prove that there is no danger, but in strengthening ourselves to go on in spite of the danger. And that's what you're talking about. These people are going, yeah, but you'll be okay in the end. There's no real danger, right? And you're like, no.
There's mega
absolutely
danger.
This is dangerous.
Yeah, danger to my identity, to my pride, to my finances, clearly. Insurance, you know, everything is on my back once that decision is made or once that occurs, you know, in August or whatnot. So, yeah, I just wanted to be vulnerable and share that that's occurring and it's exciting, it's invigorating, it's a little scary, but we've got to master our fears. Winston Churchill once said, fear is a reaction, courage is a decision.
Yes.
And so I've made a decision to go.
Yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is that there are things that are harder to do. When we talk about courage, right, we talk about all kinds of courage. Feeling fear yet choosing to act, that's applicable to what we're talking about here. Following your heart, that's applicable to here. Persevering in the face of adversity, that's applicable to here. It's almost like what you said earlier. Making yourself vulnerable emotionally is an important thing to do. Making yourself vulnerable everywhere else.
Yeah, financially.
That's a whole other
security, right? That ties into evolutionary biology of you gotta provide for your family and keep your legacy, your kin, your kids, your DNA alive and well-fed and protected and safe, and that ties into modern finance to a degree of doing that. But your point here, I wanted to share something. Do you know the story of Jim Carrey's dad?
I forget it. Tell me it again.
His dad was an accountant. Jim Carrey always thought, and his dad was really funny, apparently. And Carrey, who's a really interesting guy, he always said his dad could have been as famous a comedian as he was, but he chose the safe job and became an accountant. And when he was 12, his dad got fired from that accounting job, and he loved his dad. It was his hero. And he's like, I learned a ton of lessons from him. The number one was that if you can fail at something you don't love doing and that you have no control over that failure, you might as well go ahead and try to fail at something you love doing and you're good at.
Yes, absolutely.
And man, that always stuck with me, that quote from his dad. And it's what you're talking about. It's like you got to throw the chip, no one to hold him, no one to walk away, no one to run.
Well, it's like what is worth – look, life's going to be hard. So what is worth your suffering? Like let's talk about a Buddhist quote. Like to live is to suffer, right? The suffering of existence. It's almost like we live in like suffering minimization mode. And what you were talking about when you were talking about leaving your sure thing as a tenured professor, right? You are Zach Schaefer, PhD. You got a doctorate for a reason, and that's so that you could be a tenured professor. Your reputation is of of that. Like, that's what everyone has known you. Over the past several years, you've put another layer on top of that, which is Zach Schaefer, entrepreneur, business owner, whatever, right? And it's taken time to put that layer and really build that layer on top of your identity. You've done such a good job. It's almost like, if I think about it as a foundation or a bridge, the deck on which you built it is Zach Schaefer, PhD. And now it's taking you time, but you've built such an entrepreneurial layer on top of it that you're like, okay, I'm ready for that foundation to be taken out. And it's this bridge will still stand.
Mm, yeah, I like that metaphor. Yeah. That's good.
And yeah, you're doing an excellent job at it. But what I'm saying is, like, all of the things that you are willing to risk, your identity, right, is one of them. Like, you're losing a piece of your identity.
Yeah, no, 100%. That's why there's the emotional roller coasters there, and I still wake up at night going, is this the right decision? You know, because it's scary, man. I've got a great job, you know, that gives me tons of time, decent pay, excellent benefits. It's good, great status in society, and I'm just saying, no, I'll try something else. But I want to, sticking with this professionalism and courage and kind of the Jim Carrey dad situation, I tend to personally agree with what his dad was saying, but isn't there an argument to be made for somebody that goes the other way and just says, you know what, I might be capable of greatness, defined as fame or making a ton of money, whatever, but I need to provide for my family right now, and I'm going to go get that job
this
company, yeah, and the union or whatever. I'm going to be that carpenter my whole life, and that is going to be my sacrifice. And I'm not going to be a martyr about it or a victim. I'm going to do the work and do good work, but I'm going to do it because my focus is my family and my kids are my religion.
Hell
to
yeah,
me,
there's
that's
something to be
courage there
that.
Too.
Hell yeah.
It's how you deal with it. Now, if you victimize yourself, oh, I'm doing this, then I disagree.
Yeah, it's all in a, yes, I love what you're saying because it's so true. It's all about how you go about it.
Yeah.
Right? You're going about it in a way that is courageous but measured, right? You're stepping out but in a logical manner. You have done the work to build the foundation, and you have pretty good assurance that your chances of success are high. And it's almost like you're living by your values, but you're doing it in a reasonable and rational way. People just drive out to L.A. and go, I'm going to become an actor or a comedian. Right? And they got $10 in their wallet.
Well, I believe it's not courage if you just uproot your family, your kids from school, your wife or husband's job out of nowhere if they're not on board with that and say, we're moving.
Right.
Because I want to do this and I'm going to regret it if I don't.
It's like what we said earlier. There's extremes. It's a courageous act can be not courage. Like, if it's not, if there's a, there's extremes to yeah, either way, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it really is in the eye of the beholder, too.
Yeah. I'm just saying, how courageous is it if you're putting other people's
yes,
well-being
there,
at stake?
There it is. If you're yeah, married and have kids, you have other responsibilities, and if you own those responsibilities, you have conversations. Your wife or your husband's a partner, so you make those big decisions together. So that better be some shared courage and not just you know, being 20 and heading out there and trying to kill it.
Okay, I think this quote applies to it. Being terrified but going ahead and doing what must be done, that's courage. The one who feels no fear is a fool. The one who lets fear rule him is a coward.
Yeah, I like that.
So we're
that's
talking
very
about
good.
A fool. In this instance, if you have a family and responsibilities and all this stuff, and you're just like, well, whatever, I'm going to go be a comedian. And I'm
yeah, another way
to
think about it is don't live every day like it's your last day, because then it's just kind of chaos. You're just going to bucket list and go kind of nuts and drive out to the beach and that kind of thing. Live every day like you're about to go to battle.
Right.
So you're getting prepared, you've
right,
got plans,
right,
you're responsible, but you're still enjoying yourself.
Yeah, because the first one is like living every day like there's no ramifications to your actions.
It's Groundhog Day.
No consequences. Yeah, exactly. It's Groundhog Day. So, yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Do you want to switch gears?
Yeah, let's switch it up.
Medical courage. What about the person, as somebody who's a two-time cancer survivor, Dave, who says, yep, I'm done. I've had enough of these treatments. I'm going to go out with a higher quality of... And not somebody who just starts treatment and quits, but, you know, they've had multiple bouts or they've done all the treatments and it's still there, and then they make that choice. I view that as big time courage.
Yeah, and that goes to the one I talked about earlier with facing suffering with dignity mm-hmm. or faith. And what I will say is this, not everybody's going to want to hear this. It's probably one of the reasons why people don't like talking about death, because they're afraid. And I'll just say this, there is a high probability that you're going to suffer at the end of your life in some way, shape, or form. Everyone is
emotionally
going to
or physically or both.
Exactly. And it's, I mean, emotionally, mentally, right? So like the fear of dying is something that we've talked about many times on this podcast, and it's something everybody is going to have to deal with. So you're going to have that. Now, it doesn't matter if it's for, you know, 5 minutes because all of a sudden you're having a heart attack and literally you've got 5 minutes left and you have to process all of that fear of death in 5 minutes or 5 months because you get some chronic disease, you know, some terminal disease and you have to process it. You have 5 months to process it. Doesn't matter. You're going to process it. You're going to go through that suffering at the end of life. And everyone wants to die in their sleep peacefully.
I would love to see some stats on what that's actually like.
Probably not going to happen. So I would say for everyone, like medical courage, you know, it's an interesting thing to me because my brother, right? He went through Navy Special Warfare training. So my brother is a soon to be retired, but a Navy Special Warfare Combatant Crewman, SWCC. And his team was made up of both SWCC and SEAL.
SEALs is the one that the public's aware of, but there's two types of Navy Special Warfare. Justin, SWCC, and then there's SEAL.
Yep. And so they would ride in the same boat, and he was the insertion extraction people who it was their job to get SEALs where they were going for the mission, get them out. That's a high level of way of saying it, but I mean, the training he's been through has been intense. He's lived in the jungle and, you know, done, anyway, some crazy stories. Bottom line, what I'm saying is, for his training, you know, whatever it's called, the stuff they have to go through, I think his class started with 60-something people and, like, 10 or less graduated. You know what I mean? It's just like the same numbers as SEALs. And you suffer. That's the whole thing. They
training
make you
is
suffer the whole time. Like literally they will want to, it's almost like just mean. They just make you go get wet and sandy just to start the day. And mm-hmm. you have to be wet and sandy and cold the whole time. While you're doing all these other things that hurt, you also have to be wet and sandy. So anyway, it's just like, I remember talking to him about it and him being like, I'm tying this back to medical suffering and him being like, well, dude, I just always think about what you went through. Like whenever he's like, whenever I'm in the worst part of it. And he's like, and I just want to ring that bell and quit. He's like, I think about the stuff that you went through. And I mean, on one hand, obviously I'm so proud of my brother. He's amazing that he could get through that. On the flip side, I didn't get to choose. There was no bell I could ring.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I don't know if I deserve credit for having courage. What was my other choice?
Well, there is a bell you could ring, and the bell is, I'm done with treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, but
you were young, so most young people don't ring that bell.
Here's the difference. They ring that bell on the beach, they go get a hot meal and a hot shower and a hotel room, right? I ring that bell, and I just have a slow march to death, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That it's not the same. So no, I guess what right. I'm saying is like, here's what I'm saying. Prepare yourself. I hate to say it this way, but like prepare yourself for that point in your life because everybody's going to go through it. And it's.
Yeah, but I think there's only so much you can do if you're not sick and you haven't had those kinds of intimate brushes with death personally or somebody really close to you. You can create plans to try to be courageous when it occurs, but it's experiential. You've got to experience that.
Yes.
Feel it. Like there's, you can't plan it and intellectualize it. It just has to happen.
And there's something about having it with dignity, right? Going through it with dignity. Like, I don't know, go read Tuesdays with Maury. Go read some of these books that give you wisdom on how to deal with those situations. But you can basically be in denial, right? And just woe is me the whole time. And that's what the end of your life is. Or you can try to say this is some. This is another phase of my life that I'm going through. This is another experience that I'm having. I'm going to live it with dignity and in the best way that I can. And I would just say, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to achieve that again. I will go through that again, you know, and I don't know if I'll be able to achieve it, but I sure hope that I can, you know. I mean, the other thing to bring up in here is other people, right? And their experience with their loved one's death.
And not being happy, clearly not happy, but disagreeing and having angry outbursts if somebody chooses to end their life in a way different than they might do for themselves. And I've seen that in my own family play out. And you said something a long time ago that stuck with me, and it was that they're putting themselves, they're projecting themselves into that. And so they're not dealing with their fear and their emotional response for their own life. And so they're just putting what they would do on that other person.
Well, and you've seen this, like, sensationalized in some national news stories where children who are terminally ill are choosing, are trying to choose to not get treatment. And they literally have to go to a court to allow them. It's the worst thing that I can even imagine. Like, because other people are putting their fear on the situation. They're being selfish about the situation and not letting that person live out their life at the end with dignity and courage. Like, it's courageous to say, I think the chances are looking like I'm not going to live, and I want to enjoy the you know, short time that I have to the fullest. I believe that's courageous. Whenever loved ones, like, let's not even talk about, like, legal authorities. Let's just talk about loved ones who are forcing somebody to continue on with treatments or stay on life support or whatever for their own selfish cowardice.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's cowardice, right?
Well, it's another reason people need to get their end-of-life directives and wishes down on paper so that everybody's on the same page there.
Yeah.
But with the kids thing, what about the courage of certain religions where parents won't give kids certain types of medical treatments that are proven to help because they have a religious belief that's against it? Maybe like a blood transfusion or certain types of therapies. And is that courageous or not courageous to you?
I guess that depends on your how you feel about religion.
But
right?
That takes some major courage it to say we are going to live our religious value as number one. We don't take that treatment. We're not going to let our family. And that's when you have state and legal authorities coming in and those battles occur. But you agree or disagree with the action, that's taking mega courage.
Oh, that is living your values to a T. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I would say, like, it just depends on how you feel about religion. Well, you're going to have people argue that, just like when you were talking about leaving SIUE, and I was like, yeah, but you've done it in the right way, right? You've done it in a logical, prepared, measured manner with a high probability for success.
I've done it in the way that works for me.
Right. Versus, you know, just going, I'm quitting being a professor. I'm gonna start my own business. You know, so people would argue, well, it's not logical, it's not reasonable, blah, blah, blah. But then on the flip side, yeah, but if that's their faith and that's what they actually believe, they are living that.
It would be illogical to do anything else.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so
That's an outlier. That clearly isn't happening a lot, but it does happen. And it's easier and sometimes more fun to understand things when you're talking about the outliers rather than the norm. Which brings – go ahead.
So let's talk about that in the reverse, right? So we're saying there's something wrong, right? There's an inevitability that you have to deal with, and you're going to have courage in dealing with that inevitability. You're going to persevere. You're going to go through it with courage and dignity rather than dealing with the inevitability, but in a cowardly, sad, woe is me type of way.
Martyrdom,
right? Okay, what about standing up for what is right? What about something that isn't inevitable, but is, if you think that is wrong with the world and risking everything in order to stand up?
That's
for
funny, because I was going to switch us to this direction too, and it's capital C courage versus lowercase c courage. And we've been mostly talking about lowercase c courage, but some extreme cases of it dealing with death where you're trying to be courageous on a daily basis and live your values, that kind of courage. And there's plenty of opportunities to do it, but then there's capital C courage, which is what I'd call movement making. You're trying to move and shift a community, your family, or the country in a different direction. Martin Luther King Jr. Yeah, is a great example.
This is the most selfless thing, in my opinion, that someone can do. Because they're risking everything that they have for something else, something outside of themselves.
Yeah, some kind of cause. In today's society, with the tools of communication we have, I feel like messages get lost, though, man, real easy. People who have something to say and are trying to say it, because everybody's got a real big stage now with YouTube and internet in our pocket. A lot of good messages that probably would lead to really important changes are lost if you don't have the right kind of backing behind you.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, you know what this makes me think of? It makes me think of Tiananmen Square. It makes me think of that guy with a briefcase standing in front of that tank, right? Like, wow. You want to talk about a powerful image, and you want to talk about this, standing up for what is right. Like, no, like I'm being willing to die for something like that, right?
Yeah, die, whether it's real death or occupational identity, getting fired for something that you believe that is wrong that your company is doing, or disagreeing with your church's values and beliefs on something and leaving that church and going elsewhere and being ostracized. Those are capital C courage. Movement-making types of courage where you're really living your values in a more profound and significant way than just on a sort of daily basis opportunities to exhibit courage. Are those few and far between, or do we choose to make them few and far between?
I think we choose to make them few and far between. I think this is the fewest. So if I look at these six things: feeling fear yet choosing to act, following your heart, persevering in the face of adversity, expanding your horizons and letting go of the familiar, and facing suffering with dignity or faith, the one I skipped and the one that I think is the hardest, it's the pinnacle of courage, is standing up for what is right. Because it is. It is putting at risk, you know, what you
have. This is interesting.
It's the hardest one to do.
Yeah. I would say I just had a nice little epiphany. My thoughts evolve on my dad. He exhibits lots of courage. I have a lot of scenarios where I caused quite a bit of trouble growing up, and he would always stick up for me and always question the authorities and always have my side. One time at Cathedral Grade School, we caused so much ruckus, the boys, I think we were in maybe fifth grade, maybe sixth, that they brought in some like child psychologist to talk to our whole class and our parents. They called like a special assembly.
Wow.
And this person's there going through their speech and is apparently labeling us as like deviants and whatnot. And my dad had enough and he stood up and kind of lost it on the person. Is just like, you're calling these kids deviants and they're kids, you know, what are you talking about? And people were really uncomfortable. Apparently parents didn't stand up to support my dad, probably because the way he did it was maybe a little more aggressive than it should have been, but he definitely has courage and will stand up for the things that he believes in a way that a lot of people don't.
You know what? I admire your dad for that.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it in terms of courage.
You know, it's something I wish I had more. I really do.
Who's the most courageous person you know? Who jumps into your mind?
I don't know.
Yeah. But now it's my dad.
Yeah, like we've been talking about him. Yeah, you want to talk about somebody who's not afraid to stand up for what he believes is right.
No.
Wow, and what a powerful quality to have.
Yeah. And there's other people that do it too, I think. Well, of course, there's millions of people that do that. But the way in which you do it is very important too. If you're trying to build support and influence others to get behind you, well, you got to go about that in a certain type of way.
Yeah.
If you're just doing it to voice your own concern and say, nope, this is enough. I've been reading a bunch of books by a famous philosopher and sociologist named Eric Fromm. And one of the points he makes is that the ability to say no and to be disobedient is one of the truest forms of expressing freedom that we have. And it takes ultimate courage to express true freedom to an authority and say, no, I won't do what you want me to do. And I see my dad has done that quite a bit. And clearly Gandhi, you know, and major figures, that's what his whole movement was about, was peaceful disobedience.
Yeah. I don't know why, but Office Space popped into my head. Where, because I was just thinking of how in the business environment, so many people just don't do this.
Well, it's, everything gets sterilized and anesthetized.
Well, and like they can clearly see leadership is doing something that they disagree with and that they don't like, but they all justify their sheeple behavior.
I got a mortgage.
Yeah.
My kid's in soccer.
Well, that's what so-and-so wants, and then, you know, so we just got to do it. We just got to do it. Even though we all feel like it's wrong, we just got to go that way because that's what they want. I hear that so many times. It's crazy. And so in Office Space, it reminds me of when he comes in to meet with the Bobs, right? And this would be this courage, right? This would be like being this would be being fearless, right? To the point of being a fool. Where
what do you do around here?
Yeah. He goes, so we hear you've been missing work a lot lately. I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
Right.
I mean, just literally.
It took courage. It's definitely the fearless kind.
It was a lack of fear. It was a lack of fear where he knew he was up for being fired, and he just told him, he basically, like, I don't care. Whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he did all that because he had been hypnotized and kind of changed how he was thinking.
Right.
Going back to alcohol, though, what's a phrase for alcohol that relates to courage? It's called something.
Oh, yeah. What do they call it? Liquid courage.
Liquid courage.
Yeah.
Interesting. So we've talked about how we can use it to suppress dealing with certain types of emotions that are important. But it also... That's why alcohol is so interesting, because it can just be used to accomplish so many different good and bad things. Liquid courage, man, it helps people. It lowers those inhibitions. It'll help you say things that you don't normally have the courage to say and do. But that can be a good thing.
Well, yeah, but I love the way that we're talking about this, and I love the bit of research I did before this, because that just – it goes back to that. Feeling fear yet choosing to act is better, in my opinion, than – numbing the fear and being able to act, because it goes to the Pierce Anthony quote, being terrified but going ahead and doing what must be done, that's courage. The one who feels no fear is a fool. The one who lets fear rule him is a coward.
Yeah.
So
no,
yeah,
I agree. I'm not saying it's not the best solution.
Yeah.
But it does help people take some steps forward. This is coming from somebody who can't even drink, man.
Dude,
so,
I know. I just don't know how much credence I want to give that. Like, how often do you say, yeah, but then he got drunk and did it. Thank God he did that.
How many relationships are formed because somebody had a drink and had the courage to go talk to a girl or a guy?
That's true. That's true.
Millions.
That's true. You can't.
That's true. Our species wouldn't be here if alcohol wasn't around.
I guess what matters is what's on the line, right? So if it's rejection in a social situation that's on the line and alcohol gets you over it, that little hump, okay, fine.
Yeah, but you can extend if you like acceptance in a social situation to the proliferation.
Yeah,
of people reproducing.
Sex, I guess, whatever. But, I mean, you can't be like, well, he had to have a real important conversation with his boss about what's right and wrong in the workplace, so he went and got drunk.
Obviously, that's not what I'm saying.
Thank God he did that. That was just the best decision ever.
I'm saying that having a drink done responsibly loosens things up and allows you to talk about things that might be difficult. So is there healing for the person that represses feelings and never talks and lets their parents know what they think and what they feel, and that their parents are making them lead a life? They have a drink or two and then they're able to open that conversation. You're saying that's not healthy?
No, I what I'm saying is that's absolutely. You can,
but it would be healthier if they could do it without the booze.
Yeah.
And I agree with that.
Yeah.
But most people
can't.
Saying.
That's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is tools are obvious. I mean, if you can use something as a tool and it help you achieve something, then that's great. But don't let it become a crutch, because then...
Don't become an alcoholic.
Well, because then you become weaker as a person. You become... You know what I mean? Like, if all of a sudden that becomes your answer for dealing with tough situations, then next thing you know, yes...
You become dependent on it.
Yes, you become dependent on it. You become weaker yourself. You become less courageous yourself.
I only have one other thing. What about... We've talked about a lot about you being courageous. What about you helping others find their courage?
Wow.
in whatever way, a coach, a minister, a parent, an interested coworker, just as a human, is their courage and you kind of putting your goals and ambitions on. And I'm not talking about you're a life coach and that's what you're doing for your profession. Just you pressing pause on your shit and saying, hey, what do you got going on?
I think there's something very noble about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because there's something, there's a clarity that one has when they can see someone else's situation and not be the one dealing with it themselves.
Yeah, objectivity.
It's amazingly powerful. You want to talk about, it's because they have, is it because they have nothing to lose?
Well, yeah, of course. It's not their life. So I always like to, if you're going to have that opportunity and somebody asks you for it, well, then great, give it to them. But if not, and they're close, just, you know, hey, can I have your permission to just share a couple quick observations? And if they say no, then shut up. If they say yeah, then have a nice conversation. It's great because it's not your responsibility. It's not your consequences. The next step they take is their step, regardless of what direction it is, yeah. Not yours.
Yeah.
But where people go wrong when they're trying to help others is they put that baggage on themselves. And to me, that's a form of victimhood and martyrdom. You don't need to do that.
Yeah, so I think there's something wise in seeking that advice from those that you love and trust when you're in a moment that's tough to deal with. And there's something noble if you are the one who's loved and trusted in giving that advice.
Being honest.
Being open
not
and
telling
honest.
People what they want to hear. Oh, that's the worst.
That's the key.
That's actually not courageous, which we haven't talked about at all, is telling people what they want to hear or what we think they need to hear, but it's really about us. That's the opposite of courage.
You're right. You're right.
Because it's putting you as the focus again.
You know, there's also something noble about it because that when someone is in that position, that's the time when they're the most vulnerable, and that's the time you have the most opportunity to manipulate.
Ooh, yeah, great point.
And I mean, so I would say that's also one of those times where being the person who is loved and is trusted comes with a lot of responsibility.
I was just thinking, man, people that are in the realm of behavioral help, psychology, therapists, counseling, man, I hope most of them really take their job seriously because they are working with very vulnerable people. And I know the majority are taking themselves very professionally, but there's got to be some crackpots out there who don't and do some harm. And that I had never thought about that. That's scary because people are in a vulnerable state and are open to suggestion or manipulation or, you know, positive action.
Yes. I mean, yes. And you want to talk about what we talk about all the time on other episodes when it comes to the media and, you know, people running YouTube channels. Everybody's got an agenda.
Oh, man.
And they're all trying to manipulate people into acting a certain way, and yeah, especially the vulnerable. So, yeah, whenever you are someone who, you know, or is in a situation of where someone confides that they value your opinion and they are, you know, truly seeking your advice on a tough situation in their life. Yeah, man, there's something noble about doing that the right way, approaching that the right way and doing what you said, right? Telling them what you think is true and is right and is not what they want to hear, and doing it in a way that is as selfless as possible, right? So that you aren't trying to push any agenda that you have, no matter how enticing it would be to do that in that moment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we've been going a while. Do you have any other different topics? Because we should probably get to change challenges soon. If there's something else you want to talk about, let's knock it out, though.
Yeah, this is actually one that we didn't talk about much that I think is important, and that is expanding your horizons and letting go of the familiar. It kind of cuts at the core of what we talk about at Life Lab, and it takes courage. But it's amazing. I guess I want to talk about that. What is the relationship between courage and curiosity? And why does it seem that as you age and as you have trauma, your courage and your curiosity seem to shrink?
Well, we could go so many different ways with that. Those are big questions. One is, as we age, our body and our mind, our physical stamina and our energy all deteriorate. So perhaps our body's naturally moving away from bouts of courage and curiosity to keep us safe and secure and alive from an evolutionary perspective.
I love it.
clearly there's a lot of social pressure from what people are supposed to be doing at different stages in their life, so we conform to societal structures that preceded us. Oh, he's in his 30s. That's kid time. That's school time. That's, you know, oh, he's in his 40s. That's okay. Get that beer gut now and relax. It's your time to be, you know, happy kind of thing. Those are the two things that pop into my head. The person that keeps stretching the boundaries and pushing new things and trying new things, people also don't know how to deal with that person, and probably out of their own fear for what they're not doing or asking or thinking about, but they're kind of weirdos.
I guess that's true. I don't know why, but yeah, those
it's
are
good questions. Great questions. Yeah, those are great questions.
I look
questions.
Up to those people. The people.
Well, me too, but I don't think the majority of people do. How many people do you know at 40 just switch careers or just pick their family up and say, I'm done in the United States. We want to live according to sustainable values. We're going here. Or some big decision.
That's
very
rare. Here's what I think. I think if you ask people about that, they'll instantly be negative about it because they're being protective of their self. Yes. And being like, well, that was a dumb move. I wouldn't do that because, and then they give all these excuses, these like self-limiting beliefs, this narrative that they're trying to make themselves feel better about not being curious, about not living the life that they actually might secretly want to live, right? But it deep down, they probably envy the ability that or the courage that that person has to live their true life, to be their true self. I've got two good quotes on this.
Yeah.
One is, life shrinks or expands in proportion to one's courage.
Hmm.
And there are so many people who have a big life, right? And I think most of those people, I would love to, you know, go sit down and figure it out. But I would say most of those people, you could tie it back to their courage, right? To remain curious, to remain with the desire to expand their horizon and being willing to let go of the familiar. And that's the one quote. And the second one I'll try to say, I'll do a terrible impression here. This world demands the qualities of youth, not at a time of life, but a state of mind, a temper of the will, a quality of the imagination, a predominance of courage over timidity, of the appetite for adventure over the life of ease. That's Robert F. Kennedy.
Yeah, I was going to say it had to be a Kennedy.
Yep.
I was going to go for Teddy Roosevelt towards the end when you said adventure, because he was the great adventurer president. But yeah, no, I knew it was a Kennedy. It was good.
Yeah, all right.
Nice, man. Yeah, I think that's a pretty strong quote to end on.
Yep, I agree.
Change challenges. Mine boils down to one thing we haven't talked about, but it's so simple, I'm just going to use it as your change challenge. And that is, it takes courage to admit mistakes. And that's a daily one that we can all do. And people don't like to do it because that cuts to the core question of, am I a competent person and am I a good person? Two different questions there. So my change challenge is to follow the mistake formula to have courage. One, when you're wrong, admit it. Two, if an apology is necessary, give it. Three, talk about what's next with that person. Like, how do we need to repair this? Or what do I need to do moving forward to make sure this doesn't happen again? So, but the key part isn't to just apologize. That's good. But people hear a lot of apologies. You need to say, I was wrong here. That phrase is really important, to admit a mistake. And then you got to end with action. Next steps, what's it look like, commitments, that kind of thing. That's my change challenge.
All right. I love it. Here's mine, and this is hard. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this one. Stand up for what is right. The next time that you are in a situation and you feel like something is happening that isn't right, do something to stand up for what is right. Like, if you're in the grocery store and you see someone mistreating their child, speak up.
Pull a Don.
I mean, it's going to be uncomfortable, but it's the right thing to do, right? Like, if you truly believe that that is what is right in the world, then you need to take action and make it and speak your mind. Try to make the world a better place. God, that's going to be hard. I don't know if I can
do it. And again, but how you go about it.
Be smart, very important.
Yeah.
Be smart about how you go about it.
But this is where people get that wrong. I love it. First of all, excellent change challenge. Very hard to do. But with the kid scenario specifically, here's where I think people fuck up. They you're being a bad parent, and then they walk away feeling good. They did that so that they could feel good. It was about them still.
Right.
If you want to see a changed behavior in how that person's treating their kid when you're not around them, because you're not going to be the most of their life and yours, you've got to message that in a way so that that parent hears it, so that the next time they go to do that, they think of you and they're like, crap, that guy was right, even if they don't want to hear it. That's hard.
You're right. You're right.
Most people do it to feel good about themselves. I said something. I'm good. I'm moving forward. I was courageous. And I disagree with
you're right. And I that was just a
I wasn't trying to your change challenges nails. Yeah. I wanted to qualify it.
No, I think that's good. And I'm trying to think of what I would say. I'd probably be like, hey, he's just a kid, man. Put yourself in his shoes. Something like that.
That's good.
Right. On the flip side, like, what happens if it's at work? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
like,
that's the big one.
What if there are huge consequences for doing it? That's why this is so hard.
But yeah.
Damn. If you guys can do this change challenge, if everybody did this change challenge, the world would be a better place.
It would look different.
Yeah.
Great. Right.
So thanks for talking to us today, or sitting with us as we talk through courage.
I think today's a long one.
Man. Well, there's a lot to go through. Courage is an important thing. And honestly, I've got a lot to take away from this, and I'm going to do some self-reflection on courage and how it fits into my life. I hope everybody else does too.
Yeah, having strength in the face of pain, grief, or fear. Get some.
All right.
And as we say at Life Lab,
experiment with life.